Throughout history, there have been individuals whose actions have left a trail of devastation and terror in their wake. From notorious mobsters and serial killers to ruthless gangsters and con artists, these individuals have committed unimaginable crimes that have shocked the world. But what drives someone to become the embodiment of evil? Join us as we uncover the chilling truth behind the world's most dangerous man. Joseph Mina. Born and raised in Queens, New York, Joseph Messina was no stranger to the world of organized crime. From a young age, he immersed himself in the criminal underworld, quickly earning a reputation as a cunning and ruthless criminal. Under the tutelage of Philip Rastelli, the head of the Bonanno family at the time, Messina honed his skills and proved himself a valuable asset. Rastelli recognized Messina's potential and took him under his wing, grooming him for a leadership role within the organization. When Rastelli passed away, Messina seized the opportunity and assumed control of the Bonanno family in 1991. His rise to power was met with both admiration and fear, as he solidified his position through a combination of strategic alliances, calculated moves, and brutal displays of violence. Messina's strong-arm leadership style earned him the respect and loyalty of his subordinates. He was known for his ability to navigate the complex web of mafia politics, forging alliances with other powerful families and expanding the reach of the Bonanno organization. During his tenure as boss, Messina oversaw a wide range of criminal activities including extortion, racketeering, and murder. His influence extended beyond the boundaries of New York City, as he maintained close ties to other crime families across the country. His ruthless leadership style and close ties to other crime families cemented his position as a powerful figure within the American mafia, but it was his surprising decision to turn over state's evidence that marked a major turning point in the fight against organized crime. Messina's cooperation led to the convictions of numerous mobsters, dismantling criminal organizations, and striking a blow to the AMPA's code of silence. Gregory Scarpa. Gregory Scarpa's criminal career began in the 1950s when he became a member of the Colombo family, one of New York's five major crime families. His flair for violence and intimidation quickly attracted attention, earning him a reputation as fearless and brutal. Scarpa rose through the ranks to become a trusted enforcer involved in a variety of criminal activities including gambling, loan sharking, extortion, and murder. His unwavering loyalty to the Colombo family made him stand out and he soon rose to the position of caporegime, wielding great authority within the family. Behind the scenes of Scarpa's criminal empire, his tumultuous personal life played a pivotal role in shaping his character. For over three decades, he maintained a relationship with Linda Shiro, intimately linked to his criminal activities and eventual downfall. Their relationship was marked by violence, infidelity, and perpetual fear. Despite the chaos, Shiro remained fiercely loyal, enduring through thick and thin. Scarpa and Shiro produced two children, but their home life was far from conventional, often exposed to Scarpa's dangerous criminal milieu. Shiro was no passive observer, but involved herself in his world, assisting him in various tasks and acting as a confidant. Scarpa used his power to control Shiro, blurring the lines between loyalty and betrayal. In the 1970s and 1980s, Scarpa reached the height of his power and influence within the Colombo family. As chief enforcer and hitman for boss Carmen Persico, he cemented his position as one of the most feared figures in the AMPA. Scarpa was responsible for maintaining order within the family, enforcing loyalty to Persico, and eliminating threats. He was a ruthless hitman, feared for his cold-blooded efficiency. Scarpa also played a vital role as an informant for the FBI, gathering intelligence on rival families and criminal activities. His unwavering loyalty to Persico and deadly reputation earned him the respect of his peers, ensuring his rise within the organization. The Scarpa-Persico partnership dominated the criminal underworld, instilling fear in their enemies and maintaining the Colombo family's dominance. Scott Lee Kimball. Scott Lee Kimball, a name synonymous with pure evil, was a convicted serial killer, con artist, and fraudster based in Boer County, Colorado. His dark legacy includes at least 4 confirmed murders with suspected involvement in 21 other unsolved murders. What sets Kimball's story apart is his role as an FBI informant that allowed him to continue his fraudulent activities unchecked. Kimball's exceptional talent for manipulation and deception was alarming. An expert forger, he would fabricate evidence to make it appear as if his victims were alive even after he had taken their lives. He would then blow up their financial accounts, leaving devastation in his wake. His victims included members of his own family, including his stepdaughter and uncle, demonstrating his complete lack of mercy or remorse. Kimball's reign of terror was uncovered during an investigation into a check fraud case. However, the extent of his malevolence far exceeded expectations. His collaboration with the FBI proved to be a double-edged sword. While allowing him to evade justice for his brutal crimes, the information he provided to the FBI was often useless or false, becoming a source of embarrassment to the agency. Kimball's ability to evade capture demonstrated his cunning and deceit. He continued his fraudulent activities for years, skillfully manipulating those around him and covering his tracks. However, justice finally caught up with him in 2006, when suspicious activity in a bank account sparked an investigation that revealed the truth behind his web of lies. He had stolen identities, forged documents, and left a trail of devastation behind him. The overwhelming evidence led to a 70-year prison sentence for his fraudulent schemes and murders. Kimball now resides in the penitentiary in Florence, Colorado, where he will spend the rest of his life behind bars. Abraham Reeles. Growing up on the streets of Brooklyn, Abraham Reeles quickly turned to crime and earned a reputation for brutal acts of violence. His criminal career took a fatal turn when he crossed paths with the Shapiro brothers, the bosses of the Brooklyn AMAPA. The Shapiros, recognizing Reeles' potential, recruited him along with his childhood friends Martin Boxey, Goldstein, and Harry Pittsburgh Phil Strauss to carry out their dirty work, forming a formidable criminal team. However, the law eventually caught up with Reeles and his associates, for which they were sentenced to juvenile hall. It was during this period that Reeles hatched a revenge plot against the Shapiro brothers and brought in fellow Murder, Inc. hitmen Frank Dashier Abbandando and Harry Happy Mayone. Together, Reeles went on a killing spree to avenge perceived wrongs, cementing Reeles' reputation as a ruthless and feared hitman. But the tables soon turned against Reeles. Faced with the prospect of execution for his role in multiple murders, he made a life-changing decision to become a government witness. Reeles, Antio, a criminal's criminal, turned on his former associates, providing invaluable information that would dismantle Murder, Inc. His cooperation led to the conviction and execution of numerous members of the syndicate, including its boss, Lepka Buchalter. Reeles' inside knowledge and first-hand accounts of the criminal organization's operations served as decisive evidence in court. However, this dramatic change in Reeles' life was not without its dangers. He was scheduled to testify against Alberta Anastasia, a high-ranking member of the Cosa Nostra, further exposing the inner workings of LAMPA. However, fate intervened. In a tragic turn of events, before Reeles could testify, he met a mysterious and suspicious end. On November 12, 1941, while in police custody at the Half Moon Hotel, he fell from a window to his death. The circumstances surrounding his death have raised questions. Was it a tragic accident or a more sinister plot? Many were skeptical of the official explanation that Reeles had attempted to escape and accidentally fell. It seemed implausible, given his cooperation with authorities and the fact that he showed no intention of fleeing. The prevailing theory was that Reeles had been pushed or thrown out of the window in a calculated and orchestrated hit by the American Mafia intended to silence him before he could testify against Alberta Anastasia. Suspicions surrounding Reeles' death led to a grand jury investigation, but the jury concluded that his fatal fall had been accidental during an escape attempt. This verdict left many unsatisfied, as it did not resolve the questions that had prevailed about the circumstances of Reilly's death. Abraham Reilly's death left a huge void in the fight against organized crime. His testimony had already led to the convictions of numerous members of Murder, Inc. and their executions. However, with his untimely passing, many questions remained unanswered, and with him were buried all of Reilly's knowledge and the secrets he possessed. Abraham Reilly's was laid to rest in the old Mount Carmel Cemetery in Glendale, Queens, leaving behind a legacy of violence, betrayal, and enduring mysteries. His story, as a mobster turned informant, and the enigmatic circumstances of his death continue to intrigue the public. Frank Lucas, in the shadowy world of drug trafficking, Frank Lucas gained notoriety for his audacious smuggling methods. One particularly scandalous one was his alleged use of the coffins of deceased American soldiers to transport heroin. Lucas claimed that he took advantage of the tragic circumstances of fallen soldiers, using their coffins as cover for his illicit shipment. However, it is important to note that this claim has been disputed by his Southeast Asia partner Leslie Atkinson, who has questioned the veracity of this method. While the veracity of this claim remains a subject of debate, it adds intrigue to the already astonishing story of Frank Lucas. Lucas's reign as a drug lord came to an end when he faced the consequences of his criminal activities. In 1976, he was sentenced to 70 years in prison for drug trafficking, revealing the enormity of his crimes. However, Lucas had other plans. While incarcerated, he made the decision to become an informant and provide valuable information to law enforcement. This cooperation marked a significant turning point in his story. As a result of his assistance, Lucas and his family entered the Witness Protection Program for their safety. This step involved severing ties with his previous life and adopting new identities, an extreme but necessary measure to protect himself. Becoming an informant not only changed Lucas's role in the criminal underworld but also highlighted the complexities of loyalty and betrayal. He transformed from a feared drug lord to a pivotal figure in the fight against organized crime, using his inside knowledge to dismantle criminal networks. After years of incarceration and a remarkable transformation as an informant, Frank Lucas saw a chance for a second chance. His federal and state prison sentences were subsequently reduced, allowing him to be released in 1991. Lucas re-entered a world very different from the one he had left behind. The drug scene in Harlem had evolved and new players had emerged. A changed man, he faced the challenge of rebuilding his life outside of the criminal world. He chose to live out his days in Cedar Grove, New Jersey, where he sought solace and anonymity in a quiet suburban town that stood in stark contrast to the vibrant streets of Harlem, where he had once reigned as a drug lord. In Cedar Grove, he sought to put his past behind him and adopt a new identity. However, the legacy of his notorious past continued to haunt him. The story of Frank Lucas, Harlem's drug lord, had become embedded in popular culture, leaving an indelible mark on the history of organized crime. On May 30, 2019, at the age of 88, Frank Lucas passed away in Cedar Grove, New Jersey. His death marked the end of an era, closing a chapter in history that will forever be remembered for its astonishing tales of crime, power, and redemption. Richard Ramirez. Our narrative is set in mid-1980s Los Angeles, California, and focuses on the name that would soon strike fear into the hearts of many, Richard Ramirez. Ramirez's reign of terror began to take hold in 1984, when he carried out a series of home invasions under the cloak of darkness, leaving a trail of violence and horror in his wake. His victims ranged from the elderly to children, and his modus operandi was chillingly consistent. Armed with a variety of weapons including guns, knives, and even a hammer, Ramirez mercilessly attacked his victims, often tying them up and subjecting them to prolonged physical and psychological agony. His brutality did not stop there. Many of his victims suffered sexual assaults that left deep scars on their lives. Fear gripped the city of Los Angeles as Ramirez continued to elude authorities. His crimes seemed random, and his ability to disappear into the night only added to the terror. Across the city, residents lived in constant fear, diligently locking their doors and windows, praying that they would not fall victim to his next attack. Ramirez's audacious crimes escalated as he left cryptic messages at his crime scenes, frequently drawing pentagrams and professing allegiance to Satan. The media dubbed him the Night Stalker, and his notoriety grew with each horrific incident. As the body count mounted, law enforcement redoubled their efforts to capture Ramirez. The big breakthrough came in August 1985, when Ramirez's fingerprints were discovered at a crime scene, revealing his identity. This led to a widespread manhunt, and his photograph was circulated in the media as the public was urged to help capture him. On August 31, 1985, an angry mob identified Ramirez in East Los Angeles and chased him down before arresting him and subjecting him to a beating that reflected the brutality of his crimes. Law enforcement intervened just in time to rescue Ramirez from the wrath of the mob. In September 1989, Ramirez was convicted of 3 counts of murder, 5 counts of attempted murder, 11 counts of sexual assault, and 14 counts of burglary. The jury recommended the death penalty, and Ramirez was sentenced to be executed in the California gas chamber. He died on June 7, 2013, of complications related to B-cell lymphoma while still on death row. Jack Unterweger. Born in Austria on August 16, 1950, Jack Unterweger had a troubled childhood marked by abuse that led him to turn to criminal activities that included robbery, assault, and murder. His most notorious crimes centered on a series of gruesome murders of sex workers. Between 1974 and 1992, Unterweger embarked on a chilling killing spree that spanned several countries, claiming the lives of at least 11 women in Austria, Czechoslovakia, and the United States. His methods were brutal and deeply disturbing. Unterweger would often approach his victims by luring them into his car, posing as a customer. Once under his control, he would strangle them using his makeshift restraints or ligatures. His actions were characterized by a level of cruelty that was violent and sadistic. Despite the growing number of victims, Unterweger managed to elude capture for years by exploiting weaknesses in the criminal justice system. He even wrote articles and books posing as a reformed criminal while advocating for the rehabilitation of offenders. His eloquent writings and charismatic personality endeared him to many. In 1992, Austrian authorities finally arrested Unterweger and charged him with multiple counts of murder. The evidence against him was overwhelming, including witness testimony and forensic evidence. Unterweger's trial became a global media sensation, and the world watched in horror as the gruesome details of his crimes were revealed. Throughout his trial, Unterweger showed no remorse and maintained his innocence. The prosecution painted a chilling picture of a man who took pleasure in the suffering of his victims. In June 1994, Jack Unterweger was convicted of 9 counts of murder and sentenced to life in prison, without the possibility of parole. Justice was done, and society was relieved to learn that this monstrous predator would never be released again. Tragically, on the night of June 29, 1994, Unterweger ended his life in Grau-Karlau prison by hanging himself with a makeshift rope made of shoelaces and a tracksuit string, using the same knot used on all strangled sex workers. Pedro Rodriguez Filho. Born in Brazil in 1954, Pedro Rodriguez Filho lived a life marked by violence and tragedy from a young age. At just 13 years old, he committed his first murder, killing the deputy mayor of his city in a fit of rage. Before he turned 18, he had committed several more murders. What made Pedro Filho famous was not just the number of victims, but the sheer brutality of his crimes. His actions were characterized by an unimaginable level of cruelty. He often claimed to have killed for moral reasons, targeting those he considered criminals or those who had wronged his family. One of his most gruesome acts involved decapitating his father, whom he accused of abusing his mother. Pedro would proudly display the severed head as proof of his revenge. In 1973, Pedro's reign of terror came to an end when he was arrested for his crimes. However, his capture did not stop the bloodshed. While in prison, he continued to take lives, murdering at least 47 inmates he perceived as threats. His ability to evade justice within the confines of the prison system earned him a reputation as a ruthless and cunning killer. The case of Pedro Rodrigues Filho became one of the most infamous in Brazilian judicial history. He faced multiple murder charges and his defense argued that he was legally insane. Despite this, he was convicted and sentenced to over 400 years in prison. However, under Brazilian law, the maximum sentence a person can serve behind bars is 30 years. This meant that despite his numerous convictions, Pedro would eventually be released. In 2007, Pedro Rodrigues Filho was released from prison after serving his maximum sentence of 30 years. His rise to fame sent shockwaves throughout the country, as many feared he would resume his killing spree. However, Pedro seemed to have mellowed with age. On March 6, 2023, Pedrinho Matador suffered the same fate as others. He was beheaded and fatally shot outside a relative's residence in Brazil. Christopher Watts. In 2018, Christopher Watts committed heinous acts that would leave an indelible mark on true crime history. Born in 1985 in a small North Carolina town, Watts initially appeared to be an ordinary family man. He was married to Shannon and was the father of two young daughters, Bella and Celeste. However, beneath the facade of suburban bliss lurked a hidden whirlwind. Christopher Watts was caught up in an extramarital affair spiraling out of control, and as his secrets unraveled, so did the illusion of his normal life. On August 13, 2018, Watts committed a shocking act that reverberated across the nation. Following a heated argument with his wife, Shannon strangled her in their Colorado home. Watts then cruelly suffocated his two innocent daughters, Vila and Celeste, in their beds and disposed of their lifeless bodies at an oil field where he worked. The heinousness of Watts' actions cannot be overstated. The man who had sworn to protect and care for his family had become their worst nightmare. His crime left a trail of grief and disbelief in its wake. The sudden disappearance of Shannon, Bella, and Celeste sent shockwaves through their community. At first, Christopher Watts played the part of a concerned husband and father, pleading for their safe return. However, as investigators dug deeper, his web of lies began to unravel. The evidence against Watts was overwhelming. Security footage showed him loading his family's bodies into his truck. Cell phone records and GPS data placed him at the location where their remains were discovered. All indications pointed to premeditated murder. Watts's confession unfolded in stages. At first, he admitted to killing his wife, Shannon, in a fit of rage, but as the investigation progressed, he confessed to the cold-blooded murders of his daughters, Bella and Celeste. His motive: to start a new life with his mistress. Christopher Watts's trial was a grim spectacle as the world watched in horror as the full extent of his evil deeds were revealed. Ultimately, Watts pleaded guilty to multiple counts of first-degree murder, and the prosecution sought the death penalty. Edmund Camper. Born in Burbank, California, in 1948, Edmund Camper suffered a turbulent childhood marked by abuse from his mother, Clarence Kemper. His tumultuous upbringing laid the foundation for the violence that would come to define him. The early 1970s marked the beginning of Edmund Kemper's descent into crime. During the summer of 1972, he embarked on a killing spree that claimed the lives of six young women, mostly college students. Kemper would pick them up while they were hitchhiking and drive them to remote locations where he would commit horrific acts that ended their lives. The gruesome methods and brutality he employed defy adequate description. However, Kemper's reign of terror did not stop with these heinous acts. Shockingly, he turned his murderous inclinations towards his own family. One fateful day in 1973, he brutally murdered his mother and her friend. In a grotesque turn of events, he even decapitated his mother's body and carried out unthinkable actions with her remains. When authorities cornered Kemper, he finally surrendered in April 1973, bringing his reign of terror to an end. His arrest marked the beginning of one of the most infamous trials in American history. During his interrogation, Kemper confessed to his horrific crimes with chilling precision. He showed no remorse for the horrors he had inflicted on his victims, maintaining a calm demeanor as he provided detailed accounts of the murders that sent shockwaves through the courtroom. Kemper's trial was a horrifying spectacle that the world watched in horror. Despite his confession, his defense team attempted to argue that he was legally insane. However, overwhelming evidence of his deliberate and violent acts led to his guilty verdict in 1973 on 8 counts of first-degree murder. Edmund Kemper was later sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole, serving his sentence at the California Medical Center in Vacaville, California. While in prison, Kemper gained notoriety for his high intelligence and eloquent conversational skills. He underwent psychological evaluations that revealed disturbing insights into his psyche. However, his life behind bars was far from comfortable and was marked by frequent confrontations with other inmates, some of whom attempted to harm him. In a disturbing turn of events, Kemper unsuccessfully attempted suicide in 1973. He remains incarcerated in the California prison system. Jeffrey Dahm, born in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, on May 21, 1960, Jeffrey Dahmer hid a disturbing and horrifying reality beneath his outward appearance. Although his reign of terror began in the late 1970s, the scope of his gruesome crimes shocked the nation in the 1990s. Dahmer was a serial killer and necrophiliac, driven by a macabre fascination with dead bodies. His crimes followed a gruesome pattern. He often targeted vulnerable young women of Asian or African American descent, luring them with promises of money, alcohol, or shelter. Once inside his apartment, Dahmer would incapacitate his victims by drugging them with a lethal combination of alcohol and sedatives, then strangle or bludgeon them to death. His apartment became a house of horrors, where he dismembered the corpses and engaged in acts of necrophilia and cannibalism. Dahmer took his depravity even further, meticulously preserving body parts as grotesque souvenirs, with some remains found stored in his refrigerator and freezer. The reign of this monstrous killer came to an end in July 1991, when a man named Tracy Edwards, who had narrowly escaped from Dahmer's apartment despite being handcuffed, alerted the authorities. Edwards led police to the gruesome crime scene. Inside the apartment, officers discovered grisly Polaroid photographs of dismembered bodies and other gruesome evidence that left them shocked. Dahmer's arrest in 1991 sparked a massive investigation. His trial became a spectacle, and the world watched in horror as the gruesome details of his crimes were revealed. Dahmer was charged with 17 murders and eventually confessed to all of them. While his defense argued that he suffered from mental illness, the prosecution portrayed him as a cunning and ruthless killer. In 1992, he was convicted of 16 murders and sentenced to 16 consecutive life sentences. Ted Bundy. Born in Burlington, Vermont, on November 24, 1946, Ted Bundy appeared to have had a normal upbringing, but a sinister darkness lurked beneath the surface of his seemingly ordinary life. Beginning in the early 1970s, Bundy embarked on a grisly killing spree that shocked Washington, Oregon, and Utah. His modus operandi was sinister, often feigning injury or need for help to lure unsuspecting victims. Bundy's crimes were chilling. He abducted, assaulted, and murdered young women, terrorizing communities. His charismatic charm made it easy for him to gain the trust of his victims. Once under his influence, there was no escape. Bundy was not just a killer, he was also a master of evasion. His daring escapes, most notably the 1975 escape that led to a grisly killing spree in Colorado, increased the fear and fascination surrounding his case. In 1975, Bundy's reign of terror came to an end when he was recaptured. Even behind bars, he continued to manipulate and toy with investigators, offering tantalizing tidbits of information without fully confessing to his crimes. Bundy's trial was a sensational event, as he acted as his own attorney, allowing him to taunt the victims' families and the courtroom. However, the weight of evidence against him was undeniable, and despite his dramatic defense, he was found guilty of multiple counts of murder. On January 24, 1989, Ted Bundy's reign of terror came to an end with his execution in the electric chair at Florida State Prison. The man who had struck fear into so many was gone, but his legacy of evil lived on. Bundy became the embodiment of evil, serving as a stark reminder that monsters can hide behind a charming smile. His crimes have inspired numerous books, documentaries, and films and continue to captivate and horrify audiences. Tsutomu Miyazaki. Tsutomu Miyazaki was a Japanese national born in 1962 who was convicted of committing multiple crimes against young girls in the late 1980s. Between 1988 and 1989, Miyazaki abducted and murdered four girls between the ages of 4 and 7. The first victim was 4-year-old Marikano, who went missing in August 1988. Her body was later discovered in a remote area, indicating that she had been strangled. Over the next year, Miyazaki abducted and murdered three more girls, Masami Yoshiwa, Erika Namba, and Ayako Nomoto. Nomoto's dismembered remains were found scattered across Saitama Prefecture. In July 1989, Miyazaki was arrested after attempting to photograph young girls in a park. A search of his home revealed extensive photographic evidence of his crimes. In 1991, Miyazaki was found mentally competent to stand trial. He was convicted of multiple counts of murder, kidnapping, and indecent assault and sentenced to death. After several appeals, Miyazaki's death sentence was carried out in 2008, when he was executed on the Orca at the age of 45. The graphic nature of his crimes sparked a debate in Japan about media violence and censorship. Miyazaki's case was a rare case of serial murder in modern Japanese society. He remains one of the country's most infamous criminals. What do you think of these stories of the world's most dangerous men? Can you think of more? Let us know in the comments.